from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I get to explore Indiana's beer-making tradition one pint at a time.
Hey, I want some. I'll find out what was the funny thing that happened on the way to the forum at the F&M.
Plus I get a preview of the upcoming season at Clues Hall. And of course, we'll also have our arts calendar we call What do we do?
All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Hi, I'm Sharon Gamble. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter. Not that we need to justify our first interview today, but Travis did ask me to remind you that his subject deals with significant historical issues, as well as providing insights into contemporary craftsmanship, and it tastes good too. The subject is Indiana Crafted Beer, and Travis DiNicola's guests were here to talk about the new book, Indiana, One Pint at a Time. Author Douglas Wissing, designer Patricia Prather, and Ray Boomhauer, senior editor at the Indiana Historical Society Press, all bellied up for this interview.
Pat, Ray, Douglas, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have the three of you here today.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Thanks. Let me start with Pat. As you're a designer at Dean Johnson, this book sort of began at Dean Johnson in many ways, correct?
Correct.
I mean, you would think it would begin in a bar somewhere, but...
Well, actually, it probably did.
Well,
one of my colleagues, Mike Schwab, and Bruce Dean came up with this idea. It was their brainchild. They wanted to do a book on Indiana breweries, and we immediately thought of Douglas because of his past in breweries. With beer, I suppose, and that's how it all got started. We just we had been designing books for the Indiana Historical Society for years,
and working with Ray there.
Mm-hmm. We really enjoyed the work, and so that's why we wanted to do a book of our own.
Okay, and obviously you guys enjoy beer too.
Oh yes,
right,
of course.
Which is just a given. Douglas, tell me about your, as Pat said, your background in breweries.
That sounded a little more lurid than it should have. I had written a number of articles for national publications on a famous Trappist brewery in Belgium called Westerlederen that was ranked as the number one beer in the world, and it's a really remote place, and they only sell at the brewery. And when they were ranked as the number one brewery in the world, of course, thousands of beer lovers descended on the monastery, and the monks told everybody to go away, that they were sold out and they were praying now, which fascinated me. I love this story. And so I wrote a bunch of articles, and Mike Schwab at Dean Johnson had seen one that I think I had done for Forbes FYI magazine. And that's my background in brewing. I do have some passing understanding of beer from growing up in Indiana, and through the process of researching the book, actually discovered that I'm descended from an Indiana brewer named Ebner.
Really? You didn't know that prior?
I didn't know that. I had the oddest experience of sitting in the Vincennes Library looking at a early 20th century county history, looking for information on a brewery called Hack and Simon, and flipped a page and was looking at what I thought was a picture of my father initially, and then I read the copy and realized it was my great grandfather I believe, who owned this brewery that became a very large brewery. And it was sort of in family lore, the family had an old mansion in Vincennes that many brewers became very wealthy in back in those days, and I was unaware that he was the founder of this brewery. He had been a French Foreign Legionnaire, an Alsatian, who came to Indiana and started a brewery.
Well, that's fantastic. You were able to tap into that. Okay, no more beer jokes. Anyway, so, I mean, during the course of this, I mean, I imagine, I mean, Douglas and Pat, the two of you must have had, you know, friends saying, wow, that's got to be the coolest job in the world, working on writing and designing a beer book. Ray, even though my question for you is, you know, as an editor at the Indiana Historical Society, was there any question for you about the validity of let's say, the history of beer in Indiana as something to address?
Well, once I knew that Douglas was involved in this book, I had no worries about mm-hmm. the historical scholarship behind it because we had worked together on a number of Traces articles in the past, which is the popular history magazine, the Historical Society. And as the page proofs came in and I worked with Paula Corpus, our senior editor, who is now retired from the Historical Society, I was just amazed at the amount of scholarship behind this book. I now know more about beer from the early days in Europe and to present time than I probably will ever need to know. And it's just a fascinating look at the growth of beer and the culture behind it. And I think Doug did a great job. And it's very readable. Not only is it a handy book to have in your car as you travel around on weekends, but if you want to know about Indiana history, there it is for you, particularly the early days of the beer culture in New Harmony and the Harmonists in the southern part of the state.
Yeah, well, the book is really, it's sort of, you know, two books in one, if you will, in that it is such a great history, a cultural history of brewing as well as a travel guide. The research had to be enormously fun and satisfying, I would imagine. Tell me about it?
Writing books should always be this much fun.
And it's usually not.
No.
And I'm guessing a lot of hands-on work here. Or?
I did my part.
Yeah.
I think you're right. It is two books in one. It is a historical look at Indiana brewing. I discovered to my chagrin that there were actually more than 500 breweries in Indiana at one time or another, which I never imagined to be the case. And I have painfully researched most of them. But it's also a really in-depth look at the contemporary craft brewing scene here in Indiana, which is going through an enormous renaissance. There are more breweries in Indiana than any time since Prohibition.
Really?
Yeah. They're really prospering. They're opening more and more every day. You were just mentioning one that's opening called Flat 12 in
yeah,
Holy Cross.
Yeah, it was just announced.
Just announced. And they're opening all over the state. I was really amazed at the quality of beer that I drank. Many people don't know that though I spoke with the West Verliederen brewery in Belgium that was ranked as the best brewery in the world, best beer in the world. The one that replaced them is a Hoosier brewery, Three Floyds, up in Munster, Indiana, mm-hmm. which was ranked as the best brewery in the world 2 years in a row. Their beer, Dark Lord, was ranked as the best beer in the world a number of times, and while that's certainly an eye-opener to think that a Hoosier brewery
that's
is
an amazing story that doesn't seem to get out enough. I mean, best beer in the world.
The best beer in the world. But the thing that struck me is Three Floyds is not unique in Indiana in terms of brewing world-class beer. Indiana breweries have won enormous numbers of gold medals and silver medals in world competitions and in national competitions. And I can testify, as I traveled around the state drinking beer, I was consistently,
yes,
absolutely, little tiny sips for the most part.
Mm-hmm, right.
I would say, just give me a splash of each one. I managed to get through this without gaining 50 pounds and, you know, mm-hmm. being stopped by people.
But as you were sampling these, excuse me.
the quality of beer is extraordinary, yep. and it is right here in Indiana. We really are doing something world-class right here.
Now, Ray mentioned New Harmony, and I know that you were talking before we went on the air. We're actually recording this just right before the big microbrewery festival, and there's actually a beer that has historical roots that is being served there but is also still available now?
Yeah. Through the course of researching the New Harmonist brewers, who were the first brewers in the state in 1816, if folks don't know who the Harmonists were, they were a group of several hundred German utopianists that came to what was then the frontier of Indiana and set up an extraordinary town on the banks of the Wabash. And being good Germans, they were, of course, our first brewers. They became pretty well-known brewers and actually exported all the way up and down the Ohio, all the way back to West Virginia, all the way down to almost to St. Louis. So they were big brewers for their day, and through a little bit of an accident and a lot of hard work, I managed to discover the recipe that the Harmonists used for one of their most famous beers, which would be today called a Schwarz beer, a kind of a black lager.
Okay.
There was an old book that the Harmonists had taken with them to their new home in Pennsylvania that was still in the library there. From there, both American and German beer experts helped us translate the old German Fraktur into contemporary German, and then a beer expert here in America was able to recreate the recipe. The cool part is the brewers of Indiana Guild, they have brewed, 10 of the brewers in Indiana have brewed that recipe, so people can go and drink Indiana history. It is a remarkable thing that we've managed to connect the historical brewing in Indiana with what's happening with the contemporary craft brewing scene today.
Patricia, let me ask you, as your role as a designer with this, how did that play out? I mean, working with an author and were you involved with also, collecting the photographs? I mean, certainly you design, the book and the sidebars, and so it's a lovely book with a lot of great visual information as well. How does that process work with the two of you?
Usually I read the manuscript. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of meetings, interaction with the author to find out what he thinks is important and what needs to be highlighted with the art. And then I worked with a local photographer, Dick Spar, of Spar Photography, who took photos of the new breweries, the modern day breweries. Plus,
Sun King.
Sun King, mm-hmm. Yes, and
not to play favorites, but it is.
which was kind of fun for him because he got to go around mm-hmm. Dayton and take the thimblefuls of mm-hmm. of ale. And then the fun part for me, because I am a history buff, is I loved looking at all the old history photos and working with the Indiana Historical Society in their collection and gathering photos for that. Douglas was really helpful in finding photographs on his journeys. So it was just like a give and take between the author and the artist to get what's necessary into the book.
And then, Ray, what role does the Historical Society play in this in terms of publishing it and also editing it or being involved in that process?
Well, it's a long process. We were able to, thanks to Monarch Beverage and its financial contribution, get the funds necessary to do the actual printing of the book. But it's round after round of page proofs that our staff goes through, checks for historical accuracy, makes sure everything's every comma is in the right place and every sentence has a period, and all the usual grammatical stuff that an editor does. But also working with Pat on the design, tracking down photographs, illustrations from our library, as she's indicated, helping out with captions as well.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure everything is in its proper place and it's available to go to the printer. And then now distributing the book through the Indiana Historical Society's history market, mm-hmm. through usual online locations like Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders, and just making sure that it's available for Hoosiers to buy and enjoy.
Patricia, do you know, has Dean Johnson done a project like this before with a sort of saying, we want a book, and so let's make it?
No, this was our first venture into publishing, and it had growing pains. Scott Johnson was wondering, well, how long is this going to take? But it was fun, and we enjoyed it, and we hope to do more. I mean, we would really like to figure out how we can continue mm-hmm. to do it, because it was a fun project.
Well, no, as I've been told by Scott, it's two of your favorite things, right? Beer in Indiana. So.
And books.
And books, too.
So three of our favorite things. So.
In fact, I think Doug's already gotten a lot of emails from bookstores around the state trying to get him lined up for book signings.
Excellent.
It's an incredibly popular subject.
Not a surprise at all. Douglas, I want to give you an opportunity to sort of have the last word here. I know, obviously you've already shared with us a couple great stories of things you learned through the process, but anything else that really sort of stands out, if you could pick something out that you really want to draw people's attention to as they're looking at the book, either a specific brewery or a really interesting bit of history?
The The thing that struck me as I traveled around the state and met with the microbrewers in Indiana is how extraordinarily collegial they were, how they would support one another, and how I just never heard a bad word about another brewer. And that struck me time and time again. I think the events that they put on together, the Brewers of Indiana Guild, which is a consortium of all the, there's more than three dozen, I think, microbrewers in the state, the way they all get along and help each other get better is one of the great parts of seeing, of just reporting on Indiana brewing.
Great. Well, on that note, I guess the only thing left to say to the three of you is cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Travis DiNicola with author Douglas Wissing, designer Patricia Prather, and Ray Boomhauer, senior editor at the Indiana Historical Society Press. The new book is titled Indiana, One Pint at a Time, and it's available at the Historical Society, online at Amazon, and at local bookstores. Cheers. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
A funny thing happened on the way to the Forum, on the way to the Athenaeum. A leading character from this classical musical comedy morphed from a man to a woman. Director Bob Harbin and actress Claire Wilcher, who bends gender and plays Pseudolus, came in to tell Sharon why it's tragedy tomorrow, comedy tonight.
So, Bob, I want to start with talk about theater at the Athenaeum. Are you developing a series? Are you just doing a show at a time now? What's going on there?
We are basically trying to do one show at a time. If we can pull that off, it will be a miracle. But the Athenaeum was very kind in inviting us to come back and do shows there. They were very pleased with the shows that had been done there before. So they have helped us come up with a rental situation that we could afford, at least, you know, for someone just starting out. And we're working together in order to give them too still that character that they still have shows going on. Their character was a bad word, but they still have a theater presence. And that's something that they really want, that they don't want the city to think that they become strictly a rental palace and it's just one-nighters here and there. They really do want the community to know that they can come back there and still see good theater.
Because it's a community-based organization.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Who all comprises We?
We, pretty much John, Austin Butch, and myself. I think John is a genius, and I think that musically there is, you know, bar none, he is the best arranger, conductor, music mentalist that we have in this fair city, and I'm so fortunate to be able to work with him. We have a great collaboration with each other. We know when to shut up and let the other person, you know, take over. And we also know when to say, you know, hey, that's a really lousy idea that you just had. And work with that so that it becomes something good. But so for now, it's John and I.
Technical question. Are you operating as a 501c3, or how are you?
Yes. We are, again, fortunate in that the Docents Club at the Athenaeum has adopted me as their production arm. So the Docents at the Athenaeum are indeed a not-for-profit, so therefore we can operate as a not-for-profit while I'm trying to decide if this is actually going to, you know, be successful.
Become
or not,
a full-blown year-round
and
series,
a
yeah.
not-for-profit
and then you can
organization myself.
Ramp back up and get donations and grants and
absolutely.
That kind of stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, fortunately, you're lucky. You have a background as someone, as an entrepreneur, as an impresario who can pull together disparate elements and put on a show, literally put on a show.
And it helps. I mean, it. I have learned so many things I really didn't want to learn.
For example?
Well, if you call up the box office number, it's also my home number. So if the call comes in at 6:30 in the morning, I kind of, hello? Is this the box office? Oh, yeah, but it's 6:30. What do you... So they're anticipating a machine or something where they
sure.
can get some information. But, yes, it's been a terrific help to know different, you know, where arms and legs go. But you know what? Again, I think I'm really not afraid to ask for help. So there are a lot of people that have been terrific in helping us out. including, you know, yourself and helping put the word out, which is terrific.
So you and John are just saying, here's a show we've always wanted to do, or here's my list of 20 fabulous shows that I've always wanted to do. You write down your list in secret, I'll write down my list, and let's compare them and see what shows up on both lists. How has that been working? How did you decide on Forum?
Well, since we're at the beginning, we're trying to be careful not to set ourselves up for failure right away. So we're not doing a lot of Lorca plays, which is, you know, probably sad for all of you Spanish but
sometime,
I love them. Oh, good production of the Red Stag,
yeah,
every time. It just gets me.
Sometime we'll talk about a former artistic director at the IRT who came into town and opened with an amazing play that nobody saw.
There are wonderful and plays. I actually think it would be great to get away from just musicals and do plays that have music, you know, combined with
mm-hmm.
them. I don't think we do the classics enough in Indianapolis. It would be great, you know, to do some Lillian Hellman and some mm-hmm. Ibsen and something, and find a twist, you know, and a reason to update it, or a reason to do it. But at the beginning, we're trying to just establish ourselves, get people to know that we're up and running, and trying not to do anything so distant that we alienate the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So initially, we'll probably do a little more popular titles, and then we'll be able to do the Little Foxes and hopefully still get an audience at the same time, not be dependent upon it.
Mm-hmm.
Forum came up because of this beautiful woman sitting next to me. I worked with her a couple times, and I just think that she's the bee's knees. I mean, I think she's just amazingly talented.
Aww.
And it was a situation where there's this play that I think is hilarious, that's a lot of fun, that people really tend to enjoy, and it had never been done in Indianapolis with a woman in the leading role. Once on Broadway with Whoopi Goldberg, but it hasn't been done much since then. And I think it's interesting to see to twist things a little bit, see how the humor is rearranged a little bit. You know, bend the gender just a tad, and I think that she's completely qualified to do something, you know, that where the whole show is dependent upon this one character.
Claire, talk about Forum. Do you remember the first time you saw it, or the first time you became aware of it? Why you like it?
You know, the first time I became aware of it, I remember Footlight Musicals did a production of it a few years ago, and honestly, it was the first time I had ever seen a production in full. And it is just a comedic masterpiece as far as every character is a great comedic role. You root for everyone. There's really a lot of technique involved and concentration, and it's not just silly falling down, which, you know, you want to make it look like it is, but there's so much more to it than that. That's the first time I had ever really invested in it and studied it as a comedic piece. But honestly, to even consider doing that role was only brought up to me by Bob. I mean, I knew that Whoopi had done it on Broadway, and Nathan Lane obviously did the revival of it and,
uh-huh.
and won the Tony and all that. And did he win the Tony?
He did.
He won the Tony, and rightfully so. But
in fact, every man that's ever played Pseudolus on Broadway has won the Tony for Best Actor.
Fun fact.
No pressure.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Let's talk about, for somebody who's never seen it, maybe the plot and that role particularly, and kind of what is the message is too heavy a word, but there it is kind of a. There's
I
a
think
point
the biggest
to the show.
Message
mm-hmm.
is that eunuchs are people too, and we need to pay more attention to those card carrying eunuchs out there who.
And we're not talking about the operating system, geeks.
No.
Shut up. It's not
UNIX. It's about freedom. You have a slave, Pseudolus, who is desperate for his freedom and willing to do anything, you know, in his or her
Thank you.
Abilities. Yes, you're welcome.
Yeah.
We are not playing it as a woman playing a man.
No.
It is a woman,
right.
All woman. But she's desperate for her freedom, and she wants that more than anything else. And so when someone wants something that badly, I think zany hijinks abound as she spends, you know, about 2 hours trying to achieve it on one sunny Roman afternoon in the times of Nero.
I have to ask, because it's such an obvious question, does it take on a feminist cast then? Because
I think it could. We are exploring that, and I think, you know, as an actor, that's something that I'm studying when I'm studying the script. And when we're doing certain scenes, I think that that's something that definitely is, it has to come up. As in the script, we're changing lines from man to woman and,
sure.
and lyrics that we have to maybe say a lyric that is a little bit different just to tweak it. I think it's inevitable. So I think that there's a lot of fun that can come from that.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
And I should mention, as we're having this conversation, you're still in the early phases
yes.
of rehearsal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Was it hard to cast this locally?
It was a blast.
Yeah.
Again, since we're not part of a big company yet, we actually thought, if we had our druthers and could cast a show with people that we just know are fun people to work with,
mm-hmm.
let alone talented, which is, you know, we lucked into both categories. But we went out and we asked people, we didn't have open auditions for this particular show. We asked people if they would come on board and play with us for this production. We got an amazing number of yeses. We have a cast that from all different theaters in town. If you think that any one theater is given to using the same people over and over again, this will dispel all of that immediately. We have folks that you're used to seeing it at Civic or and Theater on the Square and the Phoenix, and we've all come together and just laugh. We have to make sure that we get work done, but we're having a great time with each other, which I think, you know, is good news as far as the production is concerned.
Mm-hmm. Have you directed this before or been involved?
I have not.
In
I was in
before?
It once.
You
I
were.
Played. I played Cynics once, many years ago. Back in the day.
is there anything you have to try to forget then, as you have a new approach and a new, literally a new role?
What I'm
as
really
director?
Looking forward, I have. What's great is there's three houses, and that's it. That's the set. So it's not a show that is dependent upon the set. A lot of the action takes place in the foreground there.
Mm-hmm.
So what I really look forward to is giving up every preconceived idea I've had about it and let these masters that we have working in the show, let them take over and simply be an editor. Just go crazy. Do what you think is terrific, and I'll just sort of sit back here. Pull from here, pull from, you know, like a Chinese restaurant. I'll take three from column A
uh-huh.
and one from column B. And I think that's going to be, that's the invitation that's here, and I'm prepared to do that and just let me stay out of the way.
Hmm. Claire, are you ever tempted to go over the top in this role? Or is it possible to?
I think it's very possible to, and that is what I am afraid to do.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, when Bob approached me about this opportunity, I didn't hesitate to get on board with it because, you know, I think Bob's brilliant and he's got this background that is just amazing. That really is a blessing for actors who want to do the best they can. So I didn't hesitate because of that, but I did hesitate because it is very farcical and it does lend itself to lots of over the top, lots of mugging, lots of how wacky can we make this?
Mm-hmm.
And so I myself am I'm a very physical comedian. I am very goofy and I'm very animated, but it's going to be interesting to try to rein that in and not make it about how goofy we can look, but how smart we can make it and how intelligent the comedy can be and let that tell its own story.
So you got to pull it back. No offense, because I know guys tend to like the Three Stooges, but pull it back from the Three Stooges and over into Marx Brothers territory.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
where there's
that's
physical
very good.
Comedy,
very
but also the intellect.
Yes.
Very appropriate.
Favorite line, favorite song?
Well, right now, my favorite line, or my favorite song is Comedy Tonight, just because it's such an iconic Broadway song. Everyone knows it. Even if you don't know the show, everybody knows that because it is the perfect opening song, in that it just basically tells what's going to happen, but in a really huge, huge way. And Right now, that's my favorite. I think it probably will vary from night to night and from show to show. But right now, I think that's going to be the best one because it will have all the energy of, wow, the curtain just came up. Here we go. Yeah, so that's my favorite. Yeah, it's my favorite moment anyway. It's like the top of the roller coaster.
Bob?
Get ready.
Yes, the line is no. and it comes to that too, and it's amazing. No. I don't know if it will transfer, but there's a part. What's terrific is, in many of the characters are called upon to become different characters within the play. We actually have three actors who play Proteans, and as the script says, they're three, but they play 30. And they do. They're everybody. They're all the townspeople. They're everything that fills in the show. But each character within the show many times is called upon to be someone else because mm-hmm. it's a lot of misrepresentations of characters and anyway. So there's at one point, Pseudolus is listening to two characters, and the character believes that there's a ghost in his house, mm-hmm. and actually, well, we changed that character to her house, mm-hmm. Another woman switcher, but Vonda Furman is playing a role that is normally played by a man. There's a ghost in my house. I need a soothsayer.
I have come to say the sooth.
And that's my
Pseudolus comes and acts as if. She is the soothsayer, and
it goes crazy, and then I'm about to say the sooth, and then I don't know, it just makes me laugh.
It's a funny scene. There's pantomiming, there's hidden identities, there's hijinks galore.
Yep, there's all of that, and hopefully we'll remember the lines and get to the end. No, that's the best show in town.
Yeah.
You start out, you remember the songs, you remember
the
lines,
make it through.
And you get to the end.
Sharon Gamble with director Bob Harbin and actress Claire Wilcher. You can see their work in A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum at the Theater at the Athenaeum, July 22nd through August 2nd. For more information or tickets, visit bobdirects.com. That's BOBDIREX, bobdirects.com. Or you can give a call to 317-280-0825.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Summer days are getting shorter.
No.
And so is our calendar.
So. That's true.
We're going to whiz through it today.
A quick summer calendar that we call.
What do we do?
Quick. I think right now, something that's going on tonight, if you're listening to the show on Friday night or, again, on Saturday evening, if you're listening to a Saturday afternoon, Dance Kaleidoscope is performing as part of the Educational Family Arts Series at the White River State Park. These are free performances. They start at 6 p.m. each evening, and they are right on the water down there at the White River State Park. Bring your picnics and blankets and lawn chairs and all that stuff. And also, just in case you miss DK this weekend, on August 6th and the 7th, Two Gentlemen of Verona will be performing Heartland Actors Repertory Theater. And then when the fall kicks in on September 11th, an evening with Rob Dixon and friends. These are all great concerts down at the White River State Park.
Love it. Hey, if you're trying to get in one last summer trip, or maybe your first summer trip if you procrastinated, I have a little road trip for you to the Traverse City Film Festival up in Traverse City, Michigan, near the cherry capital of the world. Michael Moore, the filmmaker, has created a film festival. It's called the Traverse City Film Festival, and it's going on this year from July 27th to August 1st. July 27th to August 1st. Sort of headliner films at the festival are The Kids Are All Right and Nowhere Boy, but lots and lots of other films as well. So you can just get on the internet and find out more about that and some lodging packages and et cetera, et cetera. Traverse City Film Festival, July 27th to August 1st in Traverse City, Michigan.
Very good. Symphonic Youth Orchestra of Greater Indianapolis, otherwise known as the SYO. It's a summer youth program. Has some free concerts coming up on Saturday, July 31st, 1 p.m. at the Arts Garden, Saturday the 7th at Cathedral High School. You can check out their website at syogi.org for all the information for their free concerts for the rest of the summer.
Excellent. On stage now through August 1st, Carmel Community Players, How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. Now, don't be confused. It is presented by Carmel Community Players, but it's not at the Carmel Community Playhouse. This one's at Guerin Catholic High School. So, again, running now through August 1st at Guerin Catholic High School.
CCP presenting How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. Very charming show.
And in spite of the article I saw about the world's longest dinner taking place over 30 miles on the Audubon, our local
longest dinner
is actually taking place on July 29th, next weekend. It's the longest dinner. It's the third annual time for this event that Indie Fringe launches their season with. It's also a fundraiser this year for Slow Food Indie, and it will be a ton of fun. Visit indiefringe.org for more information.
Love that, love that. And I have one last item today, Daring to be Different, Nature, Spirit, and Art. It's an exhibit you'll find out more about with an interview on next week's program, but I just want you to maybe pencil it into your calendar for the opening on August 6th. Which will take place from 5 to 9. Fascinating art with a very organic spiritual nature, and that's in the art space at Stutz.
Sounds great, and we'll be back next week with maybe a longer calendar on the thing we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Modern dance, taiko drums, screaming guitars, and some of those blue men will be taking the stage at Clues Hall this season. Travis DiNicola got the preview from James Kramer, Community Relations Manager, and Joshua Lingenfelter, the Director of Marketing for Clues Memorial Hall.
James, Joshua, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you guys here this summer.
You too, Travis.
Yeah, thanks for
being here.
Thanks for having us.
So many things coming up. Give me just a very quick background, though, on how it works with Clues Hall and Clues Presents, because certainly you're on the Butler campus, for those three people who maybe don't know that, but and you work very closely with Butler, but you're also your own sort of organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it does certainly serve over half of the events in there are Butler-sponsored or Butler-related events, and then the rest are then outside professional performing ensembles or groups, whether it be a local presentation or whether it's performances that are brought in by outside presenters or promoters or our own Clues Presents program. So it really is a great blend, a great mix, and we think for the community it's wonderful to have that great variety that you can see and inspire the next generation of professional artists who are students now, or vice versa, for those professionals to work with the students when they come into the city or are, you know, if they're resident companies, to be able to work with. And really, it's I think it's a wonderful working relationship.
And as you said, I mean, Clues Presents is sort of its own entity. I do want to be clear that it's even though I also know you work in tandem with like the Broadway Across America programs that come in. That some of those are at Clues, slightly different as well.
Right, and the Indianapolis Opera, you know, again, other major presenters that have their seasons there as well. So there is that separation that we have our own presenting season, and is again that example of the Broadway, the opera, Clues Presents, you know, a Butler Ballet season, you know, various other groups that have their season there that are considered resident companies and have their, you know, a good portion of their performances there. So
keeps you guys busy.
Yeah, it does. This year we have six.
Yeah.
Tell me what you got.
Well, we've got a few different things that we think, you know, in all honesty, we say it every year that this is the best season we've ever put on, and we'll say it again this year that this is the best season that we've ever put on.
Just keeps getting better.
But I think this is something that's, we put together what we feel like is a bit of a powerhouse season, and we wanted to really take a lot of risks to get, you know, acts either back to return to Clues, or to get things that are going to be very unique to the market that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily see unless Clues was bringing it.
Sure.
And it's one of the things that we've really, I think that Clues over the years has excelled at, is really bringing performances that are unique, that, you know, really only Clues would bring to Indianapolis. So we're going to kick off the season with Guitar Masters, which is Eric Johnson, Andy McKee, and Pepino De Agostino. And this is interesting for us because, and it's October 2nd on a Saturday. And the interesting thing about this show is that Andy McKee is really a YouTube sensation. He's one of the biggest musical artists on YouTube.
Is he that kid on YouTube?
He's a younger.
He was a kid.
He's not a kid. But he had this guitar video, mm-hmm. and it was a song called Drifting, a song okay. that he had written, and he plays it in one take,
yeah.
and it is reminiscent of Preston Reed or Michael Hedges or even Leo Kottke, but, you know, it's his hands are all over this guitar.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so he's playing both the bass parts and the melody and, you know, comping the chords for a very keyboard sound and then playing the percussion all at the same time. And, you know, here he became like one of the biggest musicians on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
and having him,
and now he's touring.
yeah, and having that. Him with Eric Johnson, who's, you know, a Grammy Award winning guitarist, and then having Peppino De Agostino, who has been a long time, sort of a people's choice of guitarists, having the three of those in mm-hmm. one concert is a rare experience. So something we're excited about, both because it sort of takes the new generation of guitarists and does something where we've said, hey, this guy is really popular on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
and so now we're going to bring him so you can see him live.
That's pretty cool.
So that's the first show.
Now, with that show, will they be playing, separately as well as together? Or
Our understanding is that they will play separately,
mm-hmm.
But as we've talked to them, as they get kind of together and start working through some things, it's very possible we're going to see some collaboration.
We'll jam at the end, maybe.
And hopefully that's the case. Sometimes they leave it so free that, we don't know until that night that it's going to happen. But
right.
In a lot of cases it does, but it makes for an interesting night regardless.
Sure, of course. And then after that?
Well, after that we have Paul Taylor Dance Company, which is coming in. In November.
One of my favorites.
Yes,
great,
yes.
Great modern dance company.
It's going to be Friday, November 5th. And it is. We are very fortunate here to have the company come in. Paul Taylor is still alive and choreographing. We're actually going to have one of his newest works on the program. And hopefully the rest of the program is going to be a little bit more like a retrospective type of thing, to see various hallmark pieces or various portions and generations of his choreography, since he's been at this for decades.
Yes.
It's wonderful. Now in his 80s and still working with the company very actively. And of course, locally, then we have Susan McGuire, who's on faculty at Butler University, to be our, and she's a former director of the second company and works in the workshops and a variety of ways, is still very much connected to the company.
Mm-hmm.
So having her here, having her knowledge and experience to be able to help us prepare the local community. We're going to be doing some outreach opportunities with master classes and with teaching students some of the repertoire, so they can then share that with us, and we all then have a better understanding of what we'll get to see with the professionals when they arrive. I think it's a wonderful way to lead that up.
Well, and that sort of educational outreach is a big mm-hmm. part, I know, of what mm-hmm. Clues does,
yes.
with as many of the performances mm-hmm. as you can.
Yes, yes. I think that's, for those that want to avail themselves of that,
mm-hmm.
it is available. For those that want to just come at 8 o'clock or hopefully 5 till, get into their seats, they can
yes,
do
please.
That too.
Please, at 5 till.
Too, yeah. But it is. I think it's a great resource that you don't get everywhere. You
sure.
know? So, yeah, that's going to be just, I think, an amazing, amazing modern dance experience. And
excellent.
Paul Taylor here.
And then after Paul Taylor?
Well, then it's a bit of a powerhouse, and we've got Blue Man Group coming. And
that's huge. This is so fun.
It's a lot of fun. And it's going to be something new for us. We're going to do 5 performances of Blue Man Group.
Okay.
And in most cases for Clues Presents, it's a one night only. You get one shot
right.
to see this, but this is a big show. So we're going to have it for Friday, November 12th through the 14th. We'll do 5 performances. I've been hard pressed to find anybody who doesn't know who Blue Man Group is. they're so iconic. You see the image and you know exactly who it is. But this is, it's performance art. It's percussion. It's music. It's sort of like using found objects as musical instruments. It's both, comedic and artistic. A lot of people don't realize, they've been around for, it's over 25 years now.
Yeah.
This has been a long-standing tradition for Blue Man Group, and they're going to be premiering new pieces on this tour, so when you come and see them in Indianapolis, even if you've seen them in Chicago or if you've seen them in Boston.
What I wanted to ask you, because I know the show's evolved quite a bit. I actually saw Blue Man Group many years ago in their first year in regular theater in New York City. Mm-hmm. Long time ago. But I know the show has evolved quite a lot since then. And so, you know, and it's bigger. I mean, more music. It seems like year by year I keep hearing it evolves.
It always evolves. And, you know, what we have for this one is it's really is the combination of sort of the retrospective of all of the Blue Man Group performances around the world.
Yeah, okay.
But also with new pieces that people have never seen before.
Cool.
So if you saw them in, you know, New York, if you saw them in Orlando at Universal mm-hmm. Studios, you're going to come to Indianapolis, you're going to see something entirely new.
Cool. Yeah. That'll be great. Now, what are the dates again for that?
That's
five shows.
That's November 12th through November 14th. And there'll be a Friday, 8 p.m. There'll be a Saturday, 2 and 8. And there'll be a Sunday, 2 and 6:30.
And Blue Man Group is just, I mean, tons of fun for the whole family, too.
Yeah. It's definitely a very family-friendly
show. Unless you have
show.
An issue with marshmallows.
Well,
and
cream cheese.
Anyway,
or,
right.
And there'll be the splatter zone. So, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. you've still got that. So, they're, again, that's the old favorites.
Excellent. So, so how do you follow up after Blue Man?
Well, you know.
You can't really. So,
it's tough, but, you know, that one's in November. We take a little break so that people can kind of rest a little bit, get through the holidays, and then we'll bring everybody back in February, on February 19th, and we'll have the Manhattan Transfer and John Pizzarelli.
Nice. Great music.
And it's, you know, we love Manhattan Transfer. We've had Manhattan Transfer a number of times. You know, they are legends within vocal jazz, or within vocal music in general. I mean, they mm-hmm. sort of cross multiple genres. I know they've got a new album out of all Chick Corea songs. But we wanted to sort of up the ante. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's a double bill. And we've got John Pizzarelli on the show as well, who's a fantastic jazz guitarist and vocalist, has a great album of Duke Ellington standards out now. And that's a really great jazz show for anybody, you know. It's not going to be so over-the-top difficult that, and I'm a huge lover of jazz, but there are a number of times where I can sit in the club and go, I have no idea what's going on.
Right. This one is certainly very easily accessible.
It's going to be easily accessible and entertaining, and I really think you get a lot of bang for your buck on a show like that, to have two full sets from two really established artists. And, you know, and Manhattan Transfer, they are legends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, absolutely. It's an exciting show.
Great stuff. And then as you get into the spring?
And after that, we're going to have the return of Kodo, and that's Sunday, February 27th.
Now, Kodo is the big drums, right?
Yes, Kodo is the Japanese drummers, mm-hmm. and these are called called Taiko.
I can hear them coming now.
And exactly. another show that Clues has enjoyed being able to present, and we don't get many opportunities to do that. They are from Japan, so mm-hmm. it's you know, every 5-6 years they decide they'll do a world tour. And they said they were coming back, and we immediately said, yes, mm-hmm. we have to have Kodo come back.
Cool.
Fantastic show. It's very family-friendly. Even though it's a lot of percussion, it's sort of the Japanese stomp, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of dance in it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of movement to it. It's not solely just people banging on drums for a couple hours. And it's really a cultural experience. Mm-hmm. You get to kind of see, like, it truly is. I mean, having somebody who's been to Japan, this really is what taiko ensembles are like in Japan. And these guys are the pinnacle. That's an exciting show. Exciting show.
Mm-hmm. And then to close out the season?
We close out with Joffrey Ballet.
Nice.
Of course, coming down from Chicago.
Mm-hmm. It's a great compliment to Paul Taylor. I mean, very different styles, mm-hmm. but certainly there's a lot of cross appeal for both as well.
Well, and I think they're both, in that reference, very strong American companies.
Yes.
And Joffrey Ballet, you know, has a very long history, and is going to come down with a rep show, so we're going to get to see them do four different pieces. They're bringing down 40 dancers, so it's going to be a really wonderful,
it's
wonderful
a huge cast.
It is, and I was kind of surprised. I thought, really? I didn't, you know, there's some pieces on the mm-hmm. program I'm unfamiliar with, so it's okay. Well, this will be interesting to see how we fill Clue's stage with Joffrey dancers, which, you know, they're doing, you know, some traditional pieces from their repertoire, mm-hmm. as well as then some new things that are coming from some new choreographers. And it'll be interesting to see not only what is happening choreographically as that evolves over time, but also to see how the company is adapting to those changes, how they are taking on that new rep and showing their roots and what they've, you know, have as their foundation from Gerald Arpino and Robert Joffrey, to where they are now under new directorship and I think a new day in touring for the company is coming. So they are doing more and more of that and realizing that so that people can recognize those that aren't coming or going to Chicago or maybe going to some other larger areas to see these companies, they can see them when they're here.
That's great.
In their area.
Now, of course, for all the shows, you can buy individual tickets, but you guys do season tickets, all that information as far as how to do that and to pick your favorite plans available on your website or give you guys a call. What's the best way?
You can do either. You can go to our website, clueshall.org. There's a graphic right on the main page. You can click there. Or you can call our box office, 317-940-6444, for our information line. So if you're interested in subscribing, we can help you over the phone, or you can download the order form on the website, or you can come by and visit us. We're on the campus of Butler University. And if you're interested in single tickets, those will be on sale September 10th.
Okay.
So we always recommend to people that if you're really interested in one or two shows, the season is the best way to go.
And then you're guaranteed you can get great seats.
You're going to get great seats. You're going to save a lot of money. And we feel like there's enough really, really fantastic performances that
great
the season is the way to go.
Well, it sounds like the best season ever, so congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You're right. James, Joshua, thank you very much for being on Art of the Matter Day. It's great to have you both.
Thank you, Travis.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with James Kramer, Community Relations Manager for Clues Memorial Hall, and Joshua Lingenfelter, the Director of Marketing. Information about the upcoming Clues Presents season and subscriptions can be found at clueshall.org, clueshall.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Vaselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4. I'll find out what it takes to dare to be different at the Stutz.
I'll get the read on the book club exhibit at the Harrison.
And I'll chat with Priscilla Lindsay about her new theatrical adventures in Michigan. And of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you, and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.